Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
The world is facing a shortage of tradespeople. The metaverse can help solve that problem. With a virtual reality training platform developed by ForgeFX, aspiring welders can practice over and over. As a result, students learn the specialized skills they need to begin and advance welding careers. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
These discussions with paramilitaries were at play with death.
Remarkable personal stories from around the world.
They don't speak with words, they speak with guns.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm Luke Jones, and welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. This time, we hear from people in the United States who are organising their own aid efforts to help the war in Ukraine. In this edition, we'll hear from people with families and friends in Ukraine who are watching the war from the US and doing whatever they can to support the fight. Our guests include Nastia, who didn't stop fundraising even on her wedding day.
I got married in January instead of gift to the guests that came. We used that money to buy a drone. Everybody at the wedding signed it and we sent it to my cousin and his battalion. They are currently using it.
Also, our guests discuss the challenges they're experiencing in the US as they try and keep up awareness and interest in Ukraine's war with Russia. It reflects to a certain extent the debate in Washington, D.C., where a $61 billion aid package of military assistance for Ukraine took months and months to get over the line. Some politicians there argued that no more money should be sent. But in the end, the U.S. continued its streak as being the single country to give the most aid to Ukraine. When it was passed, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said it could save thousands of lives, and President Joe Biden said it would make the world safer. Our first conversation is with three Ukrainian Americans who, despite the limbo of whether the US would or wouldn't continue to send weapons and equipment, have been providing aid of all kinds by themselves. Slava Petakova and her husband have lived in North Carolina since 2001. They took the decision to personally deliver aid to Ukraine. Stephen Halichak from Pittsburgh provides, amongst other things, art therapy as a relief for children and women who are traumatised by the war. And Irina Diskipio-Vashchuk, who we'll hear from first. Irina began raising aid in 2014 when Russia occupied and then annexed the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine. Her organisation focuses on providing medical help and prosthetics to injured soldiers and civilians.
In 2015, I found Revived Soldiers Ukraine. We were based in Texas, but we do work all over the United States. So since then, we really established contacts with the hospitals and medical facilities. And we could manage to bring over 100 wounded servicemen to United States for complicated medical care and prosthetics, double, triple amputees, high amputees, very, very complicated stuff. So since 2018, we actually opened up a first rehabilitation center in Ukraine for paralyzed soldiers. We locate in Irpin, which is right outside of Kiev. And we opened second location in Lviv in 2023 when already the throughout Ukraine war started. About like a week and a half prior to the invasion, all charities, pretty big charities, Ukrainian oriented here in the United States, got together on the phone call and we already started to discuss what we can do. First thing was to get medical kits and also communication, the satellite phones. We ended up purchasing about 100 ambulances for military units and field hospitals. Luckily, we start to receive donations from American people. It was nonstop. It was great because we could actually respond to the crisis, to the war, fast and quick. We were purchasing bulletproof vests, jackets. We were purchasing cars like pickup trucks, everything we can find in the United States or Europe. I think like we put $5.5 million into doing these purchases in the first year in 2022. And also very important what we did, we start to purchase medical equipment for the major hospitals, x-rays and ultrasound machines and wound wax.
Aid covers so many different things, doesn't it? I wonder, Slava and Stephen, what has been your specific bit of help that you've wanted to provide?
Our program, Ukrainian Refugee Information Exchange, is what we call our organization. It is very small, volunteer-based. We had funded some purchases of vans for rescuing people from, particularly when Mariupol was under the greatest attack. But our signature project has been an art therapy rehabilitation and skills development training program to help people deal with post-traumatic stress. And a lot of organizations are working with organizations in Ukraine to assist the children, not just children, but widows of the war. What they've seen, it's unfathomable to process, and it can scar people for life. I think we learned very much about this in our country, in America, during the Vietnam War and the trauma that the soldiers brought with them and how it manifested later in life in, substance abuse, inability to hold jobs, socialization and the like. So the program that we've been funding is a 10-day intensive art therapy program. And it's a holistic approach working with psychiatrists. There's a priest who has daily services, deals with the children's spiritual needs. They do various art projects that help them reach this information, this trauma, this ugliness that's inside and get past it, to understand that this is an extraordinary situation and this isn't normal. This is something that they need to express. The director of the program says the very first things that they produce are the ugliest. She burns 90% of them because it's the fear, it's the ugliness, it's the death. And even beyond that, they get them to a point where they can create beauty. They send us items that we actually sell to continue to raise funds for future programs. And people here are so supportive of seeing that the child can be brought to creating beauty. They're teaching them artistic skills. They teach them culinary arts. They teach them financial skills. They're giving them a childhood in microcosm and trying to give them something where they can trust people again, where they can learn to form relationships and see that there is a future.
Wow. You have a large variety of things that you do. So does Irina in North Carolina. We're a more rural area. Like, it's hard for us to centralize. I cannot speak for all the organizations, but I think we've done very, very similar work. Like, some of our groups are focusing on helping refugees and helping kids and helping people to get into the society and get the jobs. Actually, we are also co-working with the people from South Carolina, and they actually work with the International Legion, and they've been going to Ukraine and training people. So we are supporting them with all the medical supplies and whatever they need when they're there across the border. So every single time any of our members from our community goes there, we are like asking what they need, and we're supplying them, and through them we're supplying the front lines. The hardest thing is to deliver it there because shipment is taking forever. That's why we are creating the chain of people who are literally flying to Europe. We can make the chain of volunteers over there who are like, we're passing the suitcase by suitcase beside the shipments that going a little bit slower. But I have to be proud to say that just last month we had the shipment from our volunteer in Florida. I received them on Thursday. Next Thursday, they were already on the front lines in Ukraine.
We just did a joint event commemorating the second anniversary of the full-scale invasion back in February, and educating people, because it has unfortunately passed many people's radar. And in the beginning, there was so much attention. It was just, it consumed everybody. It was transformational, having worked as a Ukrainian-American, frustrated by the Russian disinformation that goes to Soviet days and prior. Lack of understanding of the history and the nature of the aggressor. Seeing the change in people's minds, but then unfortunately over the last year or so, seeing a certain portion of people falling prey, victim to that disinformation again, has been very frustrating. But nonetheless, we search for people who understand and who still really do get it and are willing to help.
A lot of times information get delivered very, very confusing, and a lot of people get overwhelmed and they withdraw. I've been talking to Canadians, I've been talking to a lot of Americans, and they think that the war is over in Ukraine. The people don't know. And I get my information a lot of times from YouTube, and I have to say that, I mean, I'm looking for the channels that sending the information, what's going on in Ukraine and the front lines beside my own channels. And we have a hard time to find anything. Every single channel that Plus Minus delivered a thing getting shut down. Even YouTube. You open the news and you see the 15 news about Taylor Swift. Yeah. And then after that, somewhere in the 26th page, you have something about Ukraine. That's getting harder and harder to deliver to people to say, hey, can you please donate? Because only people who donate, and that's what I'm getting right now, is the friends of the friends.
I wonder if any of you have any one person that you have helped or has benefited from the aid that you have organized or delivered that you think, yeah, that's the reason I keep doing this.
Not one person, but the children, when we do speak, you know, we do this through Facebook every time they have an event, the children just can't wait to talk to us and to see the brightness in their eyes, to know what these children have experienced, to know they've lost their parents. They've lost everything they know. They're taken from a south and east Ukraine, Mariupol, you know, all these cities we hear hundreds of miles away. And to see them smile, see them dance and run and play as a child should, that inspires me. I just can't wait to go and work with them and meet Tatiana, the director of this program, in person. Tatiana herself, her son, volunteered for the war the first day. He was killed last December 4th. Yet she carries on to give to these children a future, to give her country a future.
It's very difficult to see a person in a uniform, healthy and strong individual, who's going to serve and defend Ukrainian land, right? And then to see him at our rehabilitation center broken and unable to walk. And majority of the soldiers, let's recall, it's civilians who went to defend Ukraine. It's dancers, it's musicians, it's engineers, it's everybody. And of course, they're like saying thank you, and they've been very thankful for what they received from us. But, you know, it's nothing compared to what they give for Ukraine.
So hard to tell my little story about what Irina has been talking. But again, she's doing so much and she's been very famous for the past 10 years. But my little story. So when we last time we were in Ukraine and we deliver whatever suitcases full of stuff and we ship it to the people, we didn't have face to face. So my husband, being an American military, we made a little tiny kits like a tourniquet and the chevron and blood stopper. And we literally went on Kyiv train station. We just stopped people that obviously going to the front lines and give those away. A lot of people even don't stop. They think that we're trying to sell something. So I come up with the phrase and I come to one guy and I'm saying, hey, we're from the United States. We really want to help. And he stopped and he looked at me and I was like, this is the present for you. We brought the present. And I give him tourniquet. He grabbed the tourniquet. He looked at down the tourniquet and looked at me and he's like, do you understand that it saves life? I'm like, yes, that's why we brought this for you. And he reached out to give me a hug, and here's my husband comes in with American chevron, and he gives it to him. And this guy turns around, look at my husband, and he give him a salute. And in the middle of the crowd of the train station, going right and back, people running, those two people, the Ukrainian soldier and my husband, were giving each other a salute. It gave me a goosebumps, and right now we're getting ready to Ukraine again, and my husband is buying the separate tourniquets and separate chevrons, because he said that's exactly what he's going to do, because we've seen so many soldiers. We're staying in Kyiv and in some kind of little restaurant. We've heard conversation between two soldiers. They're like, we're here for rotation. Why do we do this? Because Kyiv continue lives the same life. It's hard to tell. I mean, beside the sirens and everything else, when you look out of the window, people still go to work. So when we came to them and we're saying, we're going to cover you, we're from America, but they were so grateful. The fact that people from the United States come there or from the other countries come there and give them that help, they feel that they're not alone.
Slava, Stephen and Irina, three Americans supplying Ukraine with medical equipment and funding therapy for those traumatised by the war. I'm Luke Jones, and you're listening to BBC OS Conversations.
I'm Katia Adler from the Global Story podcast, and we're looking at this summer's Paris Olympics and Paralympics. Hosting the Games put a lot of pressure on a city. This means hosting isn't quite as appealing as it once used to be. The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
According to the US government, more than a million Americans say they have Ukrainian ancestry. All three of our next guests do, and they're playing their part in the war effort. They are Nastia, who was born in Ukraine and moved to Chicago with her family as a child, Daria, who came to the US in May 2021 for her postgraduate degree, and Jason, who is the owner of the Ukrainian restaurant Veselka in New York.
The war in Ukraine has special meaning to me. I'm half Ukrainian. My grandfather escaped Russian oppression back in the late 1940s. We run a thriving Ukrainian business here in what was once called, or is still called, Little Ukraine, but we are still a center, a focal point here in New York. There's a large Ukrainian church community. And when the war began, obviously it was an outpouring of love. People coming to support. I have a large Ukrainian employee base. I was concerned that nobody wanted to come to work. There was thoughts of closing, but we all rallied together and decided, you know, we can do more as a group, as a collective, than separately. And we came up with different initiatives. I earmarked sales of our borscht to your humanitarian relief efforts. Where borscht originated, there was a battle between Russia and Ukraine, and shortly after the conflict started, UNESCO heritage site recognized borscht as an UNESCO heritage dish of Ukraine. I've been to Ukraine for a family roots tracing trip to see where my grandparents came from in Western Ukraine, and one of his original items on the menu was Ukrainian borscht. I decided right away that we would dedicate or earmark all of our funds to your humanitarian relief efforts, whether you ate it in the restaurant, took it home to eat in your living room. We even ship across the country, and we raised more than $500,000.
Nastia, what about you?
I live in Chicago, Illinois. I actually live in Ukrainian Village. I came to America when I was 4. I was born in Ternopil, Ukraine. My extended family is all still there. Here in America, it's my parents and my grandmother. I am a godchild of a soldier that died in 2015 when the war began in 2014. Mm-hmm. He was wounded in Debaltseve, which is an oblast in Donetsk. Which is now still taken over by the Russians. So that was our first experience with the war. And now when the full-scale invasion happened, I have a few family members that are currently on the front lines. I have a cousin and I have an uncle. So the war, my family's closely related to it, and we know how it feels to not only lose somebody, but continue having family members fight.
Daria, what about you?
I came to United States just 3 years ago for graduate school. I am originally from Kyiv, and all of my family is still there. Both mine and my husband's parents were on the front line, and currently my dad is back with injury, and he is now over 60 years old. We founded our nonprofit. It's called Mria, Dream in Ukrainian. That is currently raising awareness and raising funds to have soldiers, to have medical personnel on the front line. And my parents are in Kyiv helping with that.
Is the war and what is happening back in Ukraine a big part of all your lives and the conversations?
Unfortunately, I don't think we've had conversation that didn't include war to a certain extent. It was either, well, we have some losses on the front line, or we have some friends who died, or sometimes it's more uplifted
conversations, something like, hey, our tourniquets finally reached the destination and everyone was alive there.
I agree with Daria. I think as the time has gone on, the conversations at first were, what can we do? What can we send right now? What do you need? You know, down to the basics, down to humanitarian aid, down to clothing. Now our conversations are, do you need more drones? How do we fundraise for drones? For instance, I got married in January. Instead of a gift to the guests that came, we used that money to buy a drone. Everybody at the wedding signed it and we sent it to my cousin and his battalion. They are currently using it. So it's
very creative.
Do you know what kind of impact it's had? I mean, have they fed back to you how useful
it's been? Yeah, we have pictures of the boys using it. And it wasn't the first drone that we've sent. We've sent multiple and the conversations are constant, but they're evolving. But just like Daria said, we're never not talking about it.
I'm going to have to chip in and agree on all this. I mean, obviously, since the invasion first started 2.5+ years ago, I mean, we live it every day in the restaurant, not only personally, but the employees that work with side by side, and the outpouring of love that came out that everybody showed in the beginning. And now we're, you know, 2 years plus that, you know, and it's become a political hot potato here. But thankfully, legislation passed to continue the funding because the situation is very dire there. And we don't hear about it in our daily news. Unfortunately, we live in a short news cycle and the conflict in the Middle East has taken over center stage. But we have to remind not only ourselves, but the public that this is a war that should have never started and that Ukraine should be a democratic country. This should have never have happened in the first place. So there are many ways that people can continue to support. We partner with a group called Razem for Ukraine. It was a grassroots organization here in New York. I think they have outposts in Chicago and other places around the world that started in 2014 and where we actively support them and just, you know, they're constantly coming up with different ideas to help on a humanitarian relief efforts. I mean, hospitals, ambulances, it's a constant reminder that every day that we all can do something to help support.
Is there a stark difference, do you think, between you and Americans without a connection to Ukraine who just, I guess at this point, so many years into the war, going about their daily lives and barely thinking about it?
Many people don't understand the history of independence with Russia. I mean, the Budapest Memorandum, when Ukraine became an independent country, that they had the third largest nuclear warhead inventory, and they gave that up with Russia and the U.S. signing a treaty that they would always respect and honor those borders. And people don't understand that the U.S. has an obligation to support the Ukrainians that have never asked for boots on the ground, which is the kind of the red line for, you know, Americans to enter into a foreign battle. They're just looking for the weapons to support. They have the manpower. They just need the weapons. So it's very discouraging that, you know, it's become such a political hot potato here. And, you know, hopefully with this new support bill that was just passed, it's to continue the funding, that we will win this war. I mean, there'll be some resolution sooner rather than later.
Yeah, to Jason's point, I think that the everyday American has forgotten what's going on or the gravity of the situation. It's easy to become numb and desensitized to something you keep seeing. And if you're not directly related, it's unfortunately, you know, difficult to care for 2.5 years at this point. And for something as convoluted and complicated as our history with Russia, if somebody doesn't know that, it might seem very black and white to them. But we Ukrainians know that it's anything but black and white. So would I say that on the daily, you know, the typical American doesn't really think about it unless, you know, the news show that Congress didn't pass the bill or the Senate did. Yeah, they do. But then it's more of like, how much should America be funding them? Why is it taken out of our tax dollars? This is unfortunately the conversation that it's moved to now versus, yes, we 100% need to support.
Our responsibility is to constantly remind and to constantly have conversations with our friends, with our not so friends, as hard as that sounds, just showing how
many loved ones were lost, these arguments mostly work.
Educated, intelligent people understand that what's happening there is a travesty and that Ukrainians' lives matter.
Jason, Nastia and Daria, who, along with our other guests in the US, are finding many, many different ways to support Ukraine's war effort against Russia. I'm Luke Jones, and you've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.